Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer. Each week, we visit with a local author, get an introduction to their work, and sometimes a glimpse into their lives. We find out what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read from their work. Today, we're very pleased to have John Miller as our guest. Welcome, John. John has been a journalist for nearly 50 years, first as one of the top editors of the Toronto Star, then as the chair and professor at the School of Journalism at Ryerson University. He moved to Port Hope 20 years ago and is now retired. Not expired, he said, just retired. And he is rediscovering a passion for his first love, writing. 15 years after he published Yesterday's News, a non-fiction book that foretold the decline of the Canadian newspaper industry, he is working on his first novel. Well, John, Yesterday's News was picked for the Globe and Mail's 100 Most Notable Books list. Tell us a little about the list and what it meant for you when your book was chosen for it.
Yes, Felicity, the Globe 100 is their annual compilation of the books, the 100 books that their reviewers most liked that year. This was 1998. I can tell you I was very, very surprised to see my name on a list with Farley Moad and Alice Munro and John Irving and Norman Mailer. For someone with their first book under their belt, that was
a nice
humbling
surprise, though.
And what made it special was the reviewer I ran into months later was Patrick Watson, who was a distinguished broadcaster. And he just raved about my writing, and he urged me to do another book. I'm finally trying to do that.
While you were teaching, you spent several months working with small-town newspapers. What do you find so fascinating about small towns?
Well, I was born in one, and it's always nice to go back. It's hard to be anonymous in a small town. What you do matters, and things can be dealt with because you're closer to the people who decide. For a newspaper man, it's very humbling because you run into your sources on Main Street, and that keeps you honest.
So, would you like to read us a piece from Yesterday's News?
Yes, I went to Shawville and Pontiac County in Quebec to try to find some clues for what big city newspapers could do to be more relevant. So I'm going to read a little excerpt about that. When I finally manage to stumble onto Shawville's dirty little secret, I wonder if I'm about to discover the third of life's great truths. Never eat at a place called Mom's, never play cards with a guy named Doc, and never write about the arena in a small town. There's something almost sacrosanct about hockey arenas in small Canadian towns, even though Shawville's wasn't built to be a rink at all, but rather to show off healthy rutabagas and fine hand needlework for the annual Shawville Fair. The fair board just started freezing the floor so it could be used in winter. Although the unheated corrugated steel exhibit hall has no insulation and is uncomfortable for spectators, it's where two National Hockey League coaches got their start on blades. Superstar player Steve Yzerman played there in a midget tournament. This is still where a young man who skates can, if he's noticed by the scouts, still find the surest ticket out of the Pontiac. The tough brand of hockey played here is legendary throughout the Ottawa Valley, which served as the very cradle of the sport for nearly half a century. Rare was a team anywhere in Canada, amateur or professional, between 1880 and 1930, that was without a few Valley boys, including greats such as Newsy Lalonde, Frank Niber, Bill Cowley, Harvey Pulford, and Punch Broadbent. The best from right around here was Frank Finnegan, the Shawville Express, who won 2 Stanley Cups, and who was enshrined in the Hall of Fame. Fans used to bundle up in open sleighs with hot bricks to keep their feet warm and ride across the ice of the Ottawa River to follow their heroes. Sometimes a drink or two was had on the way. Every little town had a rink, and intense local rivalries grew up because, as Finnegan recalled shortly before he died, league size was limited by the number of miles a horse could travel per hour. The timber barons who established world-beating teams in little places like Renfrew and Pembroke at the turn of the century have given away to their modern-day equivalents, elected town councillors who freeze the ice and fix the boards, Kiwanis Club volunteers who coach, and public spirit merchants like Chug Electric who sponsor sweaters. But other things haven't changed at all. You can still see the fans all hunkered down in blankets under hanging electric heaters that glow red but are of little use because the heat dissipates upwards with the vapors from the crowd whenever it cheers a Shawville goal. It's often minus 35 degrees Celsius at game time, and that's inside. The cold encourages a chippy brand of hockey played at a wickedly fast pace, the players flitting across blue lines like water bugs, unleashing wild slap shots that thunder against the backboards and intimidate visiting goaltenders. Games are usually lengthy wars prolonged by slashing, spearing, high-sticking, boarding, cross-checking, and robust fighting. This, too, can be blamed on the climate, since the only place they heat inside the arena is the penalty box. The imperfections of Shawville's arena did not strike me as remarkable until the day, almost 2 months into my internship at the local paper, The Equity. I finally read the sign beside the town hall steps. It looks like one of those United Way thermometer charts, measuring the generosity of local charitable donors. Only this one is labeled Shawville Community Center Renewal Fund, and shows that nearly $100,000 has been raised to fix up the arena. The sign adds somewhat prophetically, every improvement has its price. Where, I wonder, has all that money gone?
Thank you, John. What's the great value for a reporter of working for one of those small town papers?
Well, I found this was a very good small town paper. And by the way, why I read that excerpt was it's sort of Stanley Cup season, and I thought
yes,
it might resonate with listeners. I actually was skeptical that my project would work because I was trying to find out how big city papers could get better. Mm. I didn't think I'd find so many answers in a small town, but I did. Just about everything I did taught me something that would benefit big city newspaper editors. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when my book appeared, it appeared to good reviews, but not many newspaper people read it, and newspapers have continued their decline.
Oh, dear. Now you have more time for yourself, John. Do you find you can write every day?
No, life is too busy to do that, and I find myself getting sidetracked. I think it's really important to get into a regular discipline. I'm a morning person, and while my usual life is I go to the Y and work out in the morning and try to keep fit rather than write. So I find I have to set sort of like a working time where I'm going to get non-fit and take that time to write and then reverse myself again and take some time off writing.
I suppose that really, as a journalist, you always had a deadline, which helped you get things organized and done. But now, do you set yourself deadlines?
When I started on my novel, because I wanted to write fiction, I'd never written fiction, I hope, as a journalist. When I started to write fiction, I was very intimidated by the prospect. And so I didn't set myself a deadline. I just set myself a time period, which happened to coincide with going down to Costa Rica for mm-hmm. the winter. And I took all the things that I thought I needed, a couple of ideas, a few notes, a few templates of chapter outlines, and then just set about plunging in and writing.
And are you pleased with the results?
Well, you're going to ask me about my novel, and it's
yes.
it's literally a work in progress. It's not finished, and I'm at the stage where I just went down and wrote a lot of words, and now I'm taking them back, evaluating them. So it would be very interested for the listeners to they can be the judge of whether it's any good or not.
Well, thank you. We'll take a short break now.